Hey guys, it's your boy Vinny B from Raider Nation Radio in the huddle. Guys, I've been talking for months now about TAT, an affordable quality CBD cigarette. Well, good news, all TAT products are now available at all Speedy Marts across Las Vegas. That's right, TAT products, all of them, are now available at all Speedy Marts across Las Vegas.
Broadcasting live from the RNR studios in Las Vegas, Nevada. It's the premier destination for an inside look into the Las Vegas Raiders. You're in the huddle with Vinny Bonsignor, presented by Tequila Embajador.
We're going to get to our good friend Bill Williamson in 1 second. But before we do, hey, it's your time to buy or sell a home. And Realty One Group wants to be the one to be part of your story. Yes, the housing market is hectic, but it's still a great time to sell and even buy the home of your dreams. You'll need hardworking real estate agents to get it done. And they've got you at the Realty One Group. They know the market. They know the neighborhoods. They know the transactions. They know how to get it done for you. Realty One Group was founded in Las Vegas, and it's been their home for more than 11 years. They've been opening doors for their clients and opening doors for real estate professionals to live better lives. They are also proud to give back to the community, donating their time and resources to make an impact. So whether you're selling or buying, call them today at the Realty One Group at 888-461-0101. Without further ado, we're going to go back out to the Raider Nation guest line and welcome in our good friend from SB Nation Silver and Black Pride, Bill Williamson. How you doing, my friend Bill?
Vinny, how you doing, man?
Absolutely. Always appreciate the time that you give us here on In the Huddle. All right, so the draft is complete. The Raiders continue to tinker with their roster. They just added another running back, lo and behold, today, and I want to get into that with you. But snap judgment, Bill Williamson, on what the Raiders did this year in the draft.
Well, it was interesting. You know, I think the thing that stood out to me was the aggressiveness of Dave Ziegler in his first draft with the Raiders. You know, he goes in there, he trades his first two picks for a superstar, so he shows that he's, you know, willing to not be married to the picks, as we know so colorfully a lot of GMs haven't been lately. So he joined that fray. And, you know, ESPN had a cool nugget last week that New England, since the turn of the century, has led the league in draft pick trades, and Dave Ziegler has been there for several years, of course. So I was wondering, hey, is that going to be his tack? And it certainly was, because he makes four trades, you know, and while he's on the clock, and it was fascinating, he trades 126, and he gets it back, you know, another pair of the Vikings. So that aggression kind of stood out. The fact, I think, I'm just thinking of the things that were kind of in my head, the headline, the running back in the fourth round, certainly, I mean, not a great day for Josh Jacobs' future. Not a great weekend, rather, for Josh Jacobs' future in Las Vegas. Friday, he finds out he doesn't get the fifth-year option. And then the Raiders, you know, pick White, who can play this year. And they also pick another running back in the seventh round. So certainly it doesn't mean he's not going to be here next year. But, I mean, I think all signs are pointing that way now. And then, you know, the doubling up at three positions. The Raiders picked a championship player in White from Georgia. That's 3 years in a row. Two different regimes, but also kind of looking for the same type of pedigree of players. So those are kind of the headlines in my mind.
By the way, the Raiders did add another running back today. Sincere McCormick. Yep. From the University of Texas San Antonio, had some nice numbers, by the way, at Texas San Antonio. So he gets thrown into the mix. And I want to stay right there because you mentioned Josh Jacobs. Obviously, they didn't pick up the fifth-year option. It doesn't preclude them from extending the relationship further. But you know, the money factor and all that comes into play. However, I wanted to talk to you about this, Bill, and certainly today's move and drafting Britton Brown and drafting Zamir White. Are we, and you mentioned the history of the Patriots and how they've been moving up the draft board for years with trades. When you look at that running back room and you look at running back in general, are Raider fans to get used to maybe this is how that running back position is going to get played? You draft guys, develop them, get the most you can out of them, and then while they're heading into the last year or so of their contract, you know, draft their replacement and just get as many bodies and just get a cycle going in there. Is that kind of what Raider Nation should expect with this regime?
Yeah, I think that's the way most teams have been looking at it, in the last decade or so. And, during the draft weekend, which seems quite a while ago, to tell you the truth, many, many Google searches ago, I looked up the Patriots, draft history, recent draft history of running backs, and I don't quite remember. There's been a lot in the last recent years. I think there was a stretch recently where 3 years in a row. So who's to say? And I looked that up after the White pick and before the Brown choice. So, and then I'm like, well, I got to change that little factoid. So the point is, yeah, we can see them picking running backs next year. Who knows? The fact that they were picked, two offensive linemen, two defensive tackles, and two running backs shows that he's not playing by any rules, and that's cool. Do it.
Yeah, I think so as well. And you know what other position the Patriots drafted a lot of? And a lot of times the guys that they hit on most were guys drafted well beyond the first round. That's offensive line. If you look at their roster construction over the years and how they draft players in certain position groups, the offensive line has been a position that they've dipped into beyond the first round and typically uncover some nice gems, and they get productivity out of them for a period of time. This seems kind of part and parcel with that game plan that they had in New England now being here in Las Vegas as well, Bill.
Yeah, and I think, Gabe Ziegler in that press conference before the draft gave some hints that, he said, hey, there's, we don't have a lot of picks, but it is kind of deep in at that position, and there are plenty of guys on our board in the third round, and that showed by them actually trading down from 86 to 90. And you're right, the history is there, and I think Gabe Ziegler and Josh McDaniels are very comfortable with their past and what they've learned. They're certainly going to chart their own way here in Las Vegas, but they're not going to shy away from what their roots are. And I don't think any successful professional in any, line of work should do that. Don't be that arrogant. Just do what you learn and stick to what you've known. And, he's talked about, Champ Kelly. Hey, we've been trained the same way. So he's going, in his head, he's been trained to be this way. So if we're seeing kind of examples of the, quote, Patriot way, there's nothing wrong with that.
No, not at all. And you're just putting your spin on it, Now that he's calling, because there's obviously a difference between making suggestions and making decisions. So ultimately, it's going to be Dave Ziegler and Josh McDaniels putting their spin on what they've learned and the information that they've accumulated and how they go about their business. But it will be unique to them in the long run in general. And Bill, it was interesting because on draft night, Thursday night, a source of mine in the NFL gave me a heads up on who the Raiders drafted before it was all announced. And so it was Dylan Parham, center, Memphis, the Memphis center. And it was the first time that I had really seen center described or alongside Dylan. I know that, that certain people saw him as a center, but I was like, center, I thought he was a guard. But lo and behold, there might be a chance that he ends up as a center here in the NFL. What are you hearing in terms of what Dylan's long-range future is at either position, guard or center?
Yeah, I think it depends on, who's coaching them. I think the Raiders are open to both. And I think they're open to new starters everywhere in the future. I don't think they're married to Andre James, so to speak, because of the previous regime gave him a contract. It wasn't, it wasn't a contract that they can't get out of.
Right.
I'm not saying that they're going to do that anytime soon. I'm saying it's wide open. I think the entire offensive line is wide open, and I think it's going to be a fascinating, mini camp and off-season program on the field portion, and certainly in training camp, and certainly in the preseason games, before we really know exactly what it's going to look like. And they could always add to the offensive line. But, yeah, Parham could be a center. He could be a guard. Wide open there. And I think we can wait. Leatherwood, when he was a 17th pick, and certainly a surprise 17th pick, where he played is a little bit more important, especially value at number 17 pick. But on a rookie third round pick, number 90, wasn't necessarily drafted to start right away. I think we can wait to see his development first before wondering, freaking out, oh, he's not a center yet. Oh, man, they moved him from guard. You know what I mean? I think it's more of a developmental thing than anything.
Yeah, and I think that there's still time. I know July seems like it's right around the corner, but there's definitely still time for Josh McDaniels and his coaching staff now to kind of get a handle on what it's going to look like and where the pieces are going to fit. But if we're just sitting here throwing darts at this point, how do you see the offensive line potentially shaping up from a starter standpoint?
Well, I mean, I think, and this is just gut from, McDaniels said this offseason that, hey, we know that Leatherwood was drafted to be a right tackle. And he basically said, we're not opposed to that, right? And then they didn't go get a right tackle. So that makes you think maybe they're going to start him out at right tackle and see how that goes. And I think Parham could be a guy that they would certainly like to, if he's ready to start, he probably would start. And so that brings you, at guard position. So that brings you to Good or Simpson, who's the best player. And probably lean towards Simpson since he was the healthy one last year and he's the younger one. But again, I'm fascinated to see what the actual lineup is going to be. But those three guys with Miller and James, of course, that would be my first guess.
Yeah, and I can't wait to actually see what it looks like. We'll get a chance during OTAs to kind of get a sneak peek of where guys are lining up, but I am not going in with any preconceived ideas. I think that we're going to see some surprises probably and head scratchers, and it's all going to be, with the goal in mind, again, like Dave and Josh have talked about, trying to find the best five-man combination, and I don't have any doubt that that's exactly what they're going to do, and it's not going to matter, I don't think, where guys were drafted, what position they were drafted for. Whatever they believe is the best five is what they're going to roll with, and it'll be interesting to see how that ends up looking. All right, Bill, on the other side of the ball, the Raiders started the offseason, after signing Chandler Jones, with a couple of really good, great to be pass rushers in Max Crosby and Chandler Jones, and Clelin Ferrell maybe being a role player somewhere along the line, and Malcolm Kuntz, we'll see what happens with him. But in the interior, there wasn't much at all. But, 2 months later or so, that position group has certainly been addressed with a lot of different bodies, a lot of different prototypes, a lot of different skill sets. What was your thoughts on what the Raiders did, especially in the interior of the defensive line this year?
Yeah, I wasn't surprised they drafted one, Ferrell in the fourth round from LSU. Maybe a little surprised they came back in the fifth round because they did so much work in free agency. It's a really incredible transformation from this year's defensive tackle look from last year's, and especially since last year was a huge, Gus Bradley, remember him, he brought in so many different guys, and he had success. I thought the real success to the defense last year was the Gus Bradley additions, and, guys like, Jefferson and Thomas and Filon, they really played a role in that. The Raiders got decent defensive tackle play last year. But, you knew there was going to be change because those guys are all in one-year deal and it's a new system. So it was an opportunity. So now we get to see what, Nichols does, and Hankins is going to have an opportunity. And, there's Butler, and there's Petco. There's a lot of guys. Maybe not all will make the team either. I mean, we see that all the time. Guys get signed in free agency and then they don't make it. I mean, happened a lot last year with the Raiders, last couple of years, I believe. So there might be a couple guys, veterans, that don't make it. That depends on the rookies, right? I think Butler is an interesting player. He's a little different because he's a guy who people think can get some pass rush juice. And he's also versatile, and he can move around and can swing out the defense end in it. In a pinch. And I think I really like the head on his shoulders. He was a leader at Tennessee, and somebody I talked to said he's extremely NFL minded. And I thought that was really a cool way to describe the young player who hasn't played in the league yet. So he's the kind of guy I have my eye on you know, maybe he could carve out a nice little career for himself.
Yeah, I felt the same exact way talking to him as well on
that
Saturday.
That matters.
Yeah, know? Oh, well, without question, it matters. It almost gets underrated in a lot of ways, but it certainly does. And we're talking to Bill Williamson. You can follow him at BWilliamsonNFL. He does a great job over at SB Nation covering the Raiders and the NFL and silverandblackpride.com. Bill, all right, so we, you know, we got the post yesterday from Trayvon Mullen, headed into surgery, and then the post-surgery post that everything went well. At this point, I don't think there's any question that you have to put a question mark next to Trayvon Mullen. You know, he missed most of last year with a foot and toe injury, so we'll have to see where all that is headed and what it looks like, you know, in training camp and beyond. So now it throws a little bit of a monkey wrench into that cornerback room, and I know that they're hoping that he's going to be okay. He's obviously hoping that as he goes into a big year. You've got Rock Ya-Sin, you've got Anthony Averett, you've got Darius Phillips. There are bodies there and some young players that are playing motivated to earn, you know, new contracts for themselves. But, you know, with Trayvon, with the surgery and everything like that, how concerned are you at cornerback? And could the Raiders maybe make a play for a guy by the name of James Bradbury in New York?
Yeah, I guess it really depends, you know, as far as concern about Mullen is what it was and how long it's going to be. It's as simple as that. I mean, I hate to speculate at all. He's the one that put it out, and his words,
yes,
like, it almost made you sound like it was, you know, things happen for a reason. I promise to be back. Those are... That sounds like, oh, no, you know, what's going on here?
Right.
But then he said it's nothing serious, and so who knows? But, I mean, the point is, it's only, you know, May 4th, and camp starts in 2 months. And, I mean, if you're going to have a cleanup, you think you would have a cleanup in January. Again, I don't like speculating on this stuff, but who knows?
Right.
But as far as Bradbury, yeah, I mean, there's the Giants GM today basically said it's going to be resolved by the end of the week. That would certainly make you think the Raiders would be an interesting party. And Graham coached him the last 2 years. One of the years he was a Pro Bowler. The Raiders have a need there. You know, I think even before Mullen, I would say it's a need. It's something they would like to address. I mean, certainly. So I don't know how pressing it is. But so that's a, you know, there's a certain dot connecting there. But the deal would be the money. And the Raiders could probably swing it in 3 to 4 weeks. But when an established cornerback hits the market, there is aggressive interest. And there are a lot of teams out there that could get a deal done that would probably satisfy him now. So it might be a matter of timing for the Raiders. But, you know, if he gets cut until he is signed elsewhere, I think that the Raiders are a place that you'd have to consider as a possible destination for a project.
No doubt. And when Bill talks about, the 3 or 4 weeks down the road, keep in mind, after June 1st, the Raiders get money under the cap with the Corey Littleton release becoming official and a couple other players becoming Nassib becoming official after June 1st. So there's money waiting for them under the cap here in about a month or so, almost exactly a month, to be honest with you. So, you know, as Bill said, keep a track of that, because if he does get released and he doesn't sign for a little while, that's probably bodes well for the Raiders. And, you know, you can connect the dots there and understand why there might be some, hey, just hold on. We're circling back to you when we can. And if he's, you know, interested in doing that, then maybe this will take a little while for it to come to fruition. So we'll see. Or the Raiders can make some other moves to free up the necessary money ASAP. We'll see how that goes. But I think the Raiders might be interested, and we'll see. All right, last question for you, Bill. I know it's early. We don't know what the offensive line is going to look like. We don't know if James Bradbury is going to be on the roster at any point. We don't know exactly how the running back room is going to look like, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But we're in the business of making projections and making predictions. As we look at this AFC West, and it seems like everybody except for maybe the Kansas City Chiefs got better, including the Raiders. Where at this point would you say that the Raiders kind of slot in a much improved AFC West? And it was already pretty darn good.
Yeah, I mean, two or three, you know. I'm not as sold on the Broncos being this instant, you know, leapfrog the Raiders and being a true Super Bowl contender as others are. I like the roster, and certainly they got better at quarterback. But, you know, let's see. I'm not poo-pooing that at all, but I'm just not completely sold on it. I would think the Raiders are better. I think the Chargers are really good, but the Chargers are very frustrating on game day a lot, you know, and they got to get rid of that. They got to somehow, and that's something that's been coached after. So, and I think Sherry's a good coach. I think he gets a little into it too much. You know, he's got to take a breath sometimes. But I think he's a good coach. If he takes the next step, you know, they can be in business because the quarterback's a real deal, and they got a really good roster. And, you know, I think the Chiefs are really good. You know, it's weird. I liked Davante Adams' trade for the Raiders, and I liked the Kansas City Chiefs trade of Tyreek Hill for the Chiefs. You know, they're opposites, right?
Right.
And I don't know if the Chiefs are going to be better this year without him, but I think they're going to be just fine. I think they did really good in the draft. I think they're well-coached, they're well-managed, and they're well quarterbacked. I think they're going to be fine. So I don't know if the Chiefs have slid back to the pack. The one thing I don't like about the Raiders this year is that the AFC is really, really good. And I think the Raiders are in that clump, but the clump's like 10 deep, 9 deep, right? And there's only 7 go. So that would be my only concern about the Raiders. And I don't, and that's not a knock on them. That's just kind of the reality is they got to find a way to get in that mix. And they did the best they could by adding those 2 stars. But boy, I mean, because those first 2 days without Adams, or that first day without Jones and without Adams was kind of scary. They were kind of naked, you know, because everybody else was doing something. And they're really good teams. And they countered and they answered. And now it's their time to show it on the field.
Yeah, without a doubt. And I know Raider Nation was, they were angst to the millionth degree in that 2-day period. Dave Ziegler about it in Florida, like, oh, I understood. All my friends were sending me all the memes indicating the angst. So he had a pretty funny 48 hours or so before dropping the bombs that he dropped and getting everybody reeled back in. So it's always interesting to hear from that perspective as the world is crumbling around you and you're like, just hold on. We know what we're doing here. So, and he certainly did. He certainly pulled off. He and Josh McDaniels did. Well, whatever happens, Bill Williamson is always going to be around to help us out. We truly appreciate it. The only problem is that the games don't start next week, although I'm sure every team in the league is pretty happy about that right now as they go about trying to get ready for training camp and get ready for what's going to be an amazing season. Bill, thanks for spending some time with us. Truly appreciate it. We'll talk to you down the road.
All right, Benny. Take care, man.
You got it. That is Bill Williamson from Sport Nation. Does a tremendous job. Always a great follow. Always has great information. And we always appreciate him dropping by and spending some time with us in the huddle. You're in the huddle with Vinny Bonsignor. Brought to you by Tequila Embajador Raider Nation Radio, 9:20 a.m. on a Wednesday.
Interact with the show. Text Vinny at 69187 or tweet at him at Vinny Bonsignor. This is In the Huddle with Raiders beat writer Vinny Bonsignor on Raider Nation Radio 920 AM.
Our thanks again to Bill Williamson, Raider Nation. Does a great job covering the Raiders. I've known him for a long, long time and an excellent reporter. And I know, just like everyone that we've talked to, Benjamin Albright today, we're going to talk to Rich Orenberger, the former NFL player, in just a little bit. But it's just so fascinating with this AFC West and how teams are going to navigate what are going to be treacherous waters. You're going to have 6 games if you're the Raiders or the Broncos or the Chargers or the Kansas City Chiefs that are just going to be real high level football, and it's going to be difficult to navigate that. And it's going to the good news for the Raiders is I don't care who they're playing this year. I feel like whoever they're playing, they're able to look everybody in the eye. You know, understanding that they can compete on a talent from a talent perspective. Has that always been the case here with the Raiders? No, I don't think it has been the case. I think they went into games kind of knowing that it's going to be an uphill climb talent-wise. I don't think that's the case anymore. And that's a good thing. And now it's going to come down to you. Do you execute? Can you make the adjustments? And the normal things that football or how football games are determined. But talent-wise, I think the Raiders are going to be able to look everybody straight in the eye. And to help us out with that question and to understand where the Raiders are and everyone else in the AFC West, we're going to turn to our good friend in San Diego, Rich Ornberger, former NFL player. He is now a host on Extra 1360 in San Diego, also works for Fox Sports Radio as an analyst for San Diego State University and an NFL analyst over at NBC San Diego. Rich Ornberger, thanks so much for spending some time with us in the huddle. How are you doing, my friend?
I'm doing really good, Vinny. How are you guys doing?
We're doing good. We're doing good. We're trying to make sense of the AFC West, and I know that you know, there's a lot that's going to determine how it all turns out and a lot of time in between that determination, but it's what we do, and especially now that the draft, there's a bow that was put on the draft, and you know, most teams have done all their heavy lifting in terms of the roster. I know that there's still some tinkering going on, including here in Las Vegas, but you know, from where you're sitting there on the beach in San Diego, and you look at this AFC West, you know, are you surprised at how good it got and how quickly it got that there? And how do you size it up if you are able to right now?
Man, that is a great question. And it really is difficult to answer how we got here, but we know why we're here. We're here because the AFC West is loaded at the most important position in all of sports, and that's quarterback position. When you look around and you see a Herbert and a Mahomes and a Wilson and a Carr, you understand that you can hang with any division in the National Football League, and there's a pretty good chance, if you know health prevails, that a AFC champion could come from the AFC West, and for that very reason, because if you have a great quarterback, if you have an elite level quarterback, you can take your season as far as it could possibly go. And that's what we're looking at. There is no weak spot across this division. You can make an argument for any one of these quarterbacks to finish the season on an MVP campaign, especially with the weapons that they're surrounded by. This is the, I don't want to be hyperbolic because we do that. You know what I mean? Recency bias, all that stuff. But this is arguably the most stacked we've seen a division in the National Football League in a very, very long time.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, Raider Nation and Raider fans, some of them freak out. Well, we've got the fourth best quarterback in the division. I'm like, oh, okay. I mean, but think about who else is in this division and where your quarterback truly is. Being the fourth best, quote unquote, quarterback in this division also puts you among the top, what, 10, 11 quarterbacks, 12 quarterbacks in the NFL. And that's not a bad place to be, right?
No, it's a great place to be. You know, if you are, even if it pans out where Derek Carr is in actuality, statistically, gameplay wise, you know, per any metric, the fourth best in the AFC West, it doesn't mean that the Raiders can't win a Super Bowl, because you could argue that potentially you could have every single one of these quarterbacks in the top 10 come the end of the league year statistically, and from the way they play. So I don't think that's, when you're talking about this division at this point, you're splitting hairs on paper in terms of offensively how significant these teams can play. I'm so excited. Like, I wish kickoff was tomorrow. You know what I mean?
Yes.
The most we're going to get is like the schedule release next week, but I wish we could kick off this football season next week, because this is, I'm dying to see how the Raiders look. I'm dying to see how the rest of really the AFC conference look, because it's one of those special seasons where there's a lot of competition. There's a lot of talent everywhere you look.
Rich, I want to keep it here in Las Vegas for a second or two, and I'm looking at the Raiders' offensive line, and I know that it wasn't great last year, and you know, there were points in time where it just wasn't very good at all, but they were still able to win 10 games and get to the playoffs. There's something to be said about that. If you're looking for a question mark on this otherwise stacked offense, it is the offensive line. But, you know, I go back, like, in your history with the Patriots and your kind of knowledge of how things work in New England. And if you look at the Patriots and all their success that they've had, and I know obviously Tom Brady and Bill Belichick and all that plays into it, But when you look at their offensive lines over the years, it's not like they spent a whole lot of money at that position. It's not like they spent a whole lot of high draft picks. In fact, a lot of their offensive lines were built through the third and fourth and even beyond rounds. And I'm wondering if that's kind of the game plan here, you know, with the Raiders. And why is it that they're able, that the Patriots were able to do that? And do you think they could pull kind of the same thing off here without stars along the offensive line, but good, just get good capable players to play good capable football?
Yeah, I think it's possible, and I think you have a head coach who's been indoctrinated to that style of team building and roster building with Josh McDaniels. Here's the thing. Do you need talent on the offensive line? There's no doubt. But more important than talent, you need guys who are smart enough to play the position. You need guys who are technically savvy, and you need players who are all on the same page. And a lot of that comes back to health, right? You know, the more consistently players can play together, the better off you're going to be. And that's been a problem for the Raiders in the past as well. So in the recent past. So if they can stay healthy, and everybody can be on the same page. The term that comes to mind when I think about Patriots offensive lines over the years is good enough. You just have to be good enough. And in terms of athleticism, in terms of physical capabilities, you just need to be good enough. And I think if you bring in a bunch of smart guys like Parham, their third round draft pick, because they spent so much draft capital to bring in Davante Adams. If he can just absorb the system that they're going to be running offensively, and he's a good enough athlete, it's going to work because you already have a lot of boxes checked around this offense. You know, you got Derek Carr, who's been in this league for a very long time, very, very talented quarterback, and has a full offseason now with Josh McDaniels to sort of meld their offensive minds together and find out what works best for this team. Up front, the most important thing is for everybody to be on the same page and have players who are smart enough to handle that. And if they've drafted well here, and if they pepper in some trades or free agents over the next season or so, we could see, you know, New England West, you know, on the second stint here with McDaniels. I'm excited to see what this all looks like.
Rich, the Raiders did draft in the first round last year, Alex Leatherwood. He switched positions. He was drafted as a right tackle, ultimately moved to right guard for various reasons. He struggled. The run blocking was pretty good at times, sometimes pretty darn good. The pass blocking, not so much. He definitely needs to work on that. You made the transition going from college to the NFL. In his case, Alex's case, he gets dropped in at right tackle, then gets moved to right guard, still played 18 games, including a playoff game, which counts for something. Can you talk a little bit about just sometimes the difficulty going from pros or college to the pros, and especially not only, you know, making a position switch like Alex did, and the hope that, you know what, there's still time for him to get better, and historically that's usually what happens with offensive linemen.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's no doubt about it. Look, here's the deal. Is he going to be considered, Leatherwood, is he going to be considered a bust if he doesn't end up playing a tackle position? Yeah, maybe by some people. But if he can have a successful career as a guard, if moving inside ends up being the answer for him and another year under his belt ends up sort of calming the waters a little bit, I think 2 years, 3 years departed from the draft, we're going to look a lot more kindly at that pick. It's a really difficult transition, and it doesn't matter what position you play across the offensive line, whether it be, you know, center or one of the guard spots or one of the tackle positions. It's all difficult for three reasons, and the most important one is because all of a sudden you are a very small fish in a huge pond. You're talking about playing against 10-year pros, all, you know, Americans, you know, 8 years departed from their college experience who have been able to hone their craft every single year, getting better and better and better, making Pro Bowls. And, you know, the moves up front are lightning fast. You just don't have time to think. And so the game starts to slow down in year two. And frankly, just speaking from my own playing experience professionally, it didn't really start slowing down in earnest until year three. That's when I could truly I could truly feel comfortable that I could hang physically and from a speed standpoint with what I was seeing in front of me from an athletic standpoint, and I could just really concentrate on grasping the playbook and broadening my focus. Like when you're just worried about the guy in front of you, it's very difficult to see what's happening at the linebacker level, to see what's happening at the safety level, you know, whether the safeties are rotated down and they're bringing blitz to the strong side or the weak side. I mean, it gets really confusing really fast. So I'm sure he was inundated. He was thrown right into the action. Let's give him another year to marinate. He's going to be learning a new offense. And hopefully by year three, by next season, he becomes what everybody hoped he would be in year one as a first-round draft pick. But we'll see. It's a huge learning curve, though, Vinny. I mean, it really is for everybody, and it doesn't matter where you're drafted. For some guys, it clicks faster, but either way, it's a big learning curve.
Yeah, we're talking to Rich Ohrenberger, the former Penn State University, Patriots, Cardinals, Chargers. He currently works for Extra 1360 in San Diego, also Fox Sports Radio. Works for, you know, does some San Diego State University football analysts and an analyst for NBC San Diego. Rich, you know, when you look at what the Chargers did defensively in the draft and in free agency, Brandon Staley obviously is a defensive-minded coach. You figured that at some point he was going to address the defense, and he certainly did. But how much also is that, well, how much of it is him kind of making that defense, you know, under his microscope and his vision, but also kind of a reaction to the division that he plays against and all those great quarterbacks that he's going to have to try to defend and the great offenses that they have to match up against?
Oh, I mean, you kind of answered your own question, because that's exactly what's happening. If you're a general manager, you got to mind your own backyard, but you also have to look over the fence. You know, you have to make sure that you're keeping up with the Joneses. You know, this isn't a situation where, you know, you can just say, hey, you know what, we're doing okay over here. You know, we got couple of nice players and a couple of nice positions, and you know, we're gonna go ahead and see how this goes when we start rolling the dice for real. No. You got to see that the Denver Broncos just acquired Russell Wilson. You got to see that you're competing with a potential Hall of Famer already in only year four starting in Patrick Mahomes. You got to understand that Derek Carr and the Raiders have just reloaded this offense to the tune of a dynamic duo we haven't seen since, potentially, and I don't want to overstate it, but Tom Brady and Randy Moss.
Wow.
I mean, that you could see Derek Carr with the built-in chemistry that he's already has with Davante Adams exploding this season. They got to keep him upright. They got to make sure that he doesn't get a ton of pressure sent his way. But if they can handle that, I mean, the Raiders are going to be dangerous. So, yeah, I think that had a lot to do with the reason why the Chargers went heavy on defense in trade and free agency. Signing J.C. Jackson, the corner position, really takes care of one side of the field. He's fantastic. And then Khalil Mack, not just for what he can do to affect the passer, but also what he does in the run game. And the Chargers' run defense was atrocious last year. So that's the hope, is that they shored up all of the holes in their defensive system, and Brandon Staley could have a better representation of himself defensively next season. Because as a defensive coordinator with the Rams, he looked incredible. But as a head coach, he had a defense that couldn't get off the field on third down and couldn't stop anybody on the ground.
Yeah, and not having a guy by the name of Aaron Donald probably helps or hurts a little bit in that regard. Sometimes the players make the ultimate determination as far as that all goes, but he's definitely loading up on defense, and I think that we're going to see that improve this year. All right, last question for you, Rich. You look at Kansas City, they lost Tyreek Hill. They've tried to supplement, adding some new different kind of wide receivers and, you know, trying to do it in a different way. They're stripping down the defense, trying to get that fixed. But I just think it's going to be difficult for them to be able to replace what Tyreek Hill gave them. He's one of the most unique players in the NFL. I get and I understand why they made the move that they did. But at the same time, how long could it take them to get that figured out? And are we just going to look at a different Chiefs team and how they go about things offensively without such a big dynamic weapon?
I mean, it is going to be a vastly different year offensively for the Kansas City Chiefs. When you take away a playmaker who can truly take the top off of defense the way Tyreek Hill can, I mean, you change the complexity of the offense altogether. I mean, we'll see what it ends up looking like. You know, I mean, they add some speed in the draft, and it's possible that Andy Reid can readjust things without Hill, but that's a special player, man. I mean, there are a couple of guys in NFL history who are as fast as Tyreek Hill, but also as capable of catching the football on the run the way he was. You know, we've seen it a million times before. The burner out of college who flames out at the NFL level because he can't catch the contested ball. You know, he can't go up and come down with it. That's never been a problem for Tyreek Hill. So how do you replace that production? I don't have the answer right now, and I'm not 100% certain they have that answer on their roster. So it's going to come down to Andy Reid's creativity. It's going to come down to Patrick Mahomes' veteran presence, and they're going to have to get used to the idea, more used to the idea, as they did last season about taking what the defense gives them. That was a real struggle for Patrick Mahomes a year ago. When teams didn't blitz, and they played coverage, and they forced him to throw underneath, he really struggled because he got impatient. He wanted to have the high-flying offense. Well, guess what? Without Tyreek Hill, you're taking away that deep threat aspect in a huge way. And if it is as big of a detriment to this Chiefs offense as I think it will be, it could take a few weeks, if not longer, for Mahomes and Reed and the offense to really gel around the pieces they have. I'm very curious how this Kansas City Chiefs offense looks without Tyreek Hill.
And I can imagine that there's 31 other fan bases that hear you going, sorry, Kansas City. I don't think anyone is feeling sorry for the Kansas City Chiefs, nor should they. However, with Andy Reid and with Patrick Mahomes, it's just hard for me sitting here, and I completely agree with everything that you just said. It's difficult still for me to say, yeah, they're going to be a team not to be contended with. I still think that they are, and that's how good Patrick Mahomes is, and Andy Reid and Kelsey and everyone else that they got going over there. But it will probably look, and I know it'll look, a whole lot different, and nobody feels sorry for the Kansas City Chiefs about that, certainly. Hey, Rich, thank you so much for spending some time with us in the huddle. Truly appreciate it. Thanks for the insight, as always, and we'll check with you down the road, man.
Sounds great, Vinny. Talk soon.
All righty. Rich Ornberger, the former NFL offensive lineman with the Patriots, the Cardinals, and the Chargers, always does great work and knows the game inside and out. We truly appreciate his insight. You're in the huddle with Vinny Monsignor, brought to you by Tequila Embajador, Raider Nation Radio, 920 AM.
Interact with the show. Text Vinny at 69187 or tweet at him at Vinny Bonsignor. This is In the Huddle with Raiders beat writer Vinny Bonsignor on Raider Nation Radio 920 AM.
You know, the thing is, I hate getting in trouble for things that, like, you know, you get in trouble, you do things, you know, whatever. But it's when you don't and you get, yeah. We're talking about the NBA and whatever the suspension is going to be for Dylan Brooks. What do you think it's going to be? You think it'll be a suspension?
There's no suspension.
You can't take him out of it. It could be a suspension that starts next season. If I'm doing a suspension, it'd be
for... You think he should get suspended for real?
They probably will. I would think that there's going to be some sort of a... what else is there? A fine? Maybe a big fine, I guess?
Yeah, but
you know, because you can't... And I know that he's not a dirty player at all. I'm not saying that, but there's and Steve Kerr kind of hinted on it. You know, he what did he call it? He betrayed
there's
the coach.
Code.
Yeah.
What is this, baseball?
Well, you kind of is that. Look, if I go up like that, I gotta have trust in my colleagues, and at the end of the day, they're opponents, but they're also colleagues. They're all in the same fraternity. You have to have trust that the other guy's going to handle himself correctly.
Steve Kerr, I'm tired of hearing about from Steve Kerr. Someone hurts one of the players on his – you got to stick up for your guys. But someone like, oh, someone like Rose Steph Ankle, and it's just like, come on, this game is more important than this. These players should have a brotherhood. Draymond does something, and it's, hey, man, our guys are out there playing hard. But if someone, like, looks at Steph's ankle wrong, there's a code to this game.
By the way,
there's so much respect that needs to be played.
Yeah.
This is a brotherhood.
Yeah. I don't like – I remember when I was covering the Dodgers, and they were playing the Cardinals, and we were in St. Louis. It's during the playoffs, and the Cardinals are all mad at Adrian Gonzalez because he is a huge Disneyland fan, and he had – bunch of daughters, and they were huge Disneyland fans too. So whenever he got a hit or a big play, he would do the Mickey Mouse ears. You know, just it was almost him to his wife. You know, his teammates got into it too, and so all the Cardinals were all up in arms about the betrayal of the you know. And I'm talking to Adrian in the dugout one day before one of the games. He's like, "Watch what they do. You don't think that they're celebrating when they score a run, getting up safe and doing all that? It's always convenient to argue against the other guy when you're basically doing the same thing. It might be a different way, but it's the same thing.
Especially running up the score. When the score gets run up on your team, there's no place for that in the game. You know, the game's already in hand. They didn't need to score another time.
Right.
But then if the shoe's on the other foot, hey, you got to play until the last whistle. No lead, safe enough.
Right, exactly. Well, in the NBA, you do have that. You dribble it out when there's about 10 seconds left. That's just the right thing to do because, you know, most guys that get – and plus, you don't want to – the other part, you don't want to give anybody, especially in a series, anything, any little thing to –
That did happen last night with the Grizzlies because they were up about, like, 8 points. I don't remember the final score of the game.
Okay.
Oh, no, maybe they won by six or something, but it doesn't matter because they had, like, just a leak out of they didn't get the foul. Right. And then it, but Zaire Williams, he didn't take the easy dunk. He just kept dribbling it.
Something that's even better. I like that. We're like, nah, I'm not going to – I don't need to. We've already beaten you. The game's over.
There was definitely enough time to get that dunk in and you know, have it count the stat book and not have to worry
exactly.
about it.
I want to say thanks to Bill Williamson. Thanks to Rich Ornberger. Thanks to Benjamin Albright. Big, huge treat tomorrow. Darren Waller will be joining us in the huddle at 4 o'clock at the top of the show. He's doing so many tremendous things off the field to help the community and help people that really need help. And we're going to talk to Darren about everything that he's doing, and we're looking forward to that. So tune in tomorrow, 4 to 6 p.m. at the top of the hour, Darren Waller. Thanks to Devon Cotton, our great producer. Great show today. We'll check back in with you tomorrow, 4 to 6 p.m. in the huddle. Vinny Bonsignor brought to you by Tequila Embajador. Hey guys, it's your boy Vinny B from Raider Nation Radio in the huddle. Guys, I've been talking for months now about TAT, an affordable quality CBD cigarette. Well, good news, all TAT products are now available at all Speedy Marts across Las Vegas. That's right, TAT products, all of them, are now available at all Speedy Marts across Las Vegas.